The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
It's Friday night. We don't often get to go to New Zealand for guests, sometimes. And most often, it's to talk to Lindsay Perigo, who is standing by down there. Lindsay is an author. He's a friend. He is a great devotee of the classics, music. He is a musicologist in his own right. He has written one of the most unusual books ever about the greatest natural voice possibly of all time, certainly of the last century, that, of course, of Mario Lanza. The book is entitled The One Tenor. There really only was one, if you look at things logically. And why, after all these years, Mario died in 1959, are people still writing books about him, still issuing CDs in honor of him, still holding benefit concerts in which his timeless classics are performed for another new audience? It's really something, when you think about it, that is unprecedented, that has never happened before. Lindsay, are you there?
I certainly am, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's nice to talk to you again. You're busier than ever.
Yes, actually, I was busy ensconcing myself on the couch awaiting Mr. Trump in Florida. I thought I had another hour before I came on air with you, so I will have to watch Mr. Trump a little later on.
Ah.
I have to say, it's possibly the most fascinating election in my lifetime. I remember the one between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. Circumstances were actually similar in many ways. And the prediction was, of course, that Carter would trounce Reagan, who was a mere movie actor. But Reagan indeed proved that prediction to be soundly wrong.
This is an event over here, as much as anything. It's an event in American history. Now, you've been watching this very closely, and if all of you out there have gone to the top of rents.com in the last couple of hours, you'll see a new top political art piece, and it has to do with a video that a medical doctor, 38 years, I believe, as a professional doctor, has put together, and I'm drawing attention to that and asking you to take a look at that. He has really assembled what, in all likelihood, is the primary physical disaster that has befallen Mrs. Clinton. It is advanced, Parkinson's. Not beginning, not middle. It is advanced, last stage Parkinson's. They have done a masterful job of hiding this. I can't even believe how they've hidden this. She is a walking pharmacological miracle. They pump her up. They put her. All she wants to do is sleep. That's the inside word. I don't know how she's still able to stand. They had her go to an airport the other day to get on her jet, and they had to cordon off the back of her van, Lindsay, so no one could see her getting out of the van. And that suggests that she came out in a wheelchair or was maybe lifted out. She's not well, let's put it that way, and she's really not well enough even to be running for this office. All things said and all things equal, she should be disqualified.
Well, yes, I mean, you say she's a pharmacological miracle. I think she's an ethical miracle in that it's just inconceivable to me that she can be guilty of the things that she's guilty of. She can be known to be guilty of the things that we know she's guilty of, and that anyone can contemplate allowing her to run. What has happened to the system? That she's still there, that she's still a candidate. Now, it's quite clear. Comey's in the tank with her. Comey is crooked. It's not just
Hillary. Absolutely.
The whole system seems to have just gone down the tube. And I think, as far as Obama's concerned, it's mission accomplished. He said when he was running in 2008, my objective is the fundamental transformation of America. And no one bothered to examine that statement, but he meant it. And he's done it. Because contrary to what I said about Reagan defying the odds and beating Carter, I don't think Trump is going to pull this one off because the demographics have changed. And that's been part of the fundamental transformation of America as well, is the transformation of the demographics. So the electorate is inherently now democratic. But it's gone to hell in so many ways. The education system, the justice system, as I say, the FBI is clearly crooked. All those reliable old mainstays that you could repair to keep the system honest are themselves no longer honest. And it really is very depressing. And I speak to you from, you know, I like to make the joke that in New Zealand we're ahead of you, but you're ahead of us in the plunge towards self-destruction, and we're certainly following, but you're spearheading it, and it's just mind-boggling to me. I didn't think this would happen in my lifetime.
I didn't either, and I want to tell you, in conjunction and correlation and extrapolation as to what you said, how can she be running? Further, how can anyone of reasonably sound mind and body even contemplate voting for a career criminal with more felonies behind her than a diesel locomotive pulling a freight train? I mean, this is ridiculous. The woman is a crook.
That's the other massive corruption, and the worst one of all is the corruption of the voters. How can they be so stupid? How can they be so lacking in a moral compass? Education system has got a lot to do with it. It's just turning out zombies. I like to call them moronials, not millennials, but moronials. And they not be allowed to vote. No. You should now have to have a test that establishes that you know what America's history is, what its founding ideals were. You don't have to say which way you'd vote, but you have to prove your political literacy. That's what I advocate now, because you just need to watch the vox pops on television and realize these creatures have the vote. And that is just utterly horrifying.
It is horrifying.
In any event, our dear friend Mario, of course, is certainly a counterweight against the direction that America has gone. Thank you so much for plugging the book, which has recently come out. And I think you're aware also that in a couple of weeks I'll be embarking with a group called Opportunity.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Yeah, let me do one other thing on the politics issue. Then I'm going to go to Opportunity, which is really very, very marvelous. And maybe somebody over here will pick up your idea. Maybe they'll bring you over here to narrate it, because you should. The idea of a political campaign like this, in which just the other day, Barack Obama, arguably the biggest liar, now I have to say next to Hillary Clinton in American political history, who did lay out and did declare and announce what his agenda was, and nobody paid attention to it. He has done more damage to this country in 8 years than could be conceived of. People still don't understand it. They cannot wrap their minds around it. Add to that that just the other day, I think it was 2 days ago, another $10 million has been spent by Obama to register illegal aliens to vote. Lindsay, you don't have to be a citizen of the United States to vote. You don't have to demonstrate any knowledge of our values system, our political system, nothing. It's madness.
It's beyond madness, and I just can't begin to contemplate how it could possibly have happened. And how it's a toss-up for me between who's worse, Hillary or Obama. Obama Islam, I like to call him. If he's not actually a Muslim, he might just as well be, because he's contributed markedly to the Islamification
he grew up
of America.
Yes, he grew up as a Muslim as a child, and certainly that's imbued in him. I concur. Now, the other thing, and I'd like to talk just a little bit more about politics with you, because it's so good to talk to someone who is not living here, who sees what's happening here so clearly. And Europe. These so-called refugees are not refugees. They're foot soldiers. They are foot soldiers in an invasion and a conquest of Europe. They couldn't do it in the 1400s. They couldn't do it. Now they're in Europe, and they're pushing 4 and 5% in some populations. They have rape gangs running berserk in Germany. They're not even talking about the number of, there are over 200,000, 250,000 crimes in Germany this year already that are not being mentioned. So we have over there the same thing we have in the U.S., a completely complicit and depraved media. They're hiding it. They're covering it up.
And Barack Obama has let in something like 100,000 over the last few months, and Hillary wants to push that up to 500,000.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's absolutely treasonous what those two have been up to. So, again, I say it's just inconceivable to me that someone with her record and her obvious intentions can be running at all. But then again, you've had 8 years of Barack Obama, who's been just evil through and through, and why he hasn't been impeached for treasonous activities, I can't begin to imagine.
Well, look, and I don't want harm to befall anyone, but you think about all the assassinations, all the murders on the Clinton body list, on and on, and how has this man escaped somebody coming after him? I'm not saying I want that to happen, but it is amazing. There was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump 6 weeks ago, this next Tuesday. Nobody was covering the story that I could see except me. I pushed it hard. I had two papers written on it. We know it was a real event, a very sophisticated plan, simplistic, but well done in terms of an assassination event. It didn't happen. Fortunately, one Secret Service agent saw the assassin trying to make it to the service elevator and caught him. Turns out that the guy, when they took him to the New York City Police Department, was fingerprinted. And it was a dead FBI agent. Now, figure that one out. He died in 2007. Even the director, Mr. Mueller of the FBI, read the obituary, the eulogy, I should say, at the funeral. But he didn't die. He was shot in the shoulder, and they sheep-dipped him and turned him into a wet ops assassin. And he was the one they sent after Trump with a Glock with no serial number and a silencer. He was caught. It's all true. Nobody wants to talk about that. You got five corporations over here now, Lindsay, that control over 95% of the media. So it's really an easy thing to abuse, attack, and attempt to dismember Donald Trump around the clock for the last year, which is exactly what's happened. That man has my admiration. He has withstood more sheer abuse and horror than anyone I've ever seen in the major political arena.
Yes, well, that's one of the things that I was going to mention earlier when I rattled off the list of institutions that have become corrupted, the media. And I speak as someone who worked in the media for 40 years, radio and television announcer and journalist broadcaster, and I've never seen such bias as this, some unabashed bias. They don't even try to hide it.
No,
they don't. CNN are particularly bad, the Clinton News Network, as Trump quite accurately calls them. But, I mean, you'd think that at least try to maintain a pretense of an artifice of objectivity or neutrality. But that's just gone completely out the window, and they're so clearly...
Quite right. The globalists no longer make the effort. They throw it right in the faces of America, and the people take it. They just don't respond. They figured out when they had passed that tipping point, and they no longer have to worry about anything. They lie, just like Clinton doesn't have to worry about lying. What did she say in that alleged presidential thing the other night? She said that she was sorry that she had put the server in her house and that she regretted her vote for the Iraq war. What the hell is this? You know? I mean, come on.
Yes, that just leaves me speechless, I have to say. And I'm not one known to be speechless, as you know, but yeah. I just look from afar and think, my God, America, you're finished. And that's beyond terrible.
This is, again, coming from Lindsay in New Zealand, and I want you all to listen very carefully to what we've been talking about and understand that it's not just me, it's not just you, it's the world can see this clearly, but Americans have lost it.
Yes, well, I suppose they no longer have a sense of where they came from, what their history is, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the whole notion of everybody having inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the government to secure these rights are instituted among men for that purpose. All of that, Americans just don't seem to have a clue what makes their country unique. It was being founded on those principles that enabled it to become so great and such a beacon for refugees from tyranny all over the world. But it no longer stands for those things, and Americans don't seem to be aware of them.
Their heritage was taken away from them by the media, by design. This is all planned. No accident. Nothing is left to chance anymore.
Well, I'm curious to know, if you say it's all planned, who planned it? Because I'd certainly like to know that. Whoever it was did a damn good job.
Yeah, you can start at... At the top, the Rothschild bankers, Goldman Sachs, George Soros, Kissinger and Associates. These are the visible faces of the world machine, the engine that's running the world now. There are others who are certainly in the shadows, but they have been at this for a long time. It's nothing. In fact, a friend of mine, Charlotte Iserbeet, put together a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, in which she, with documentation, as you know, traces back the overhaul and the communization of America's education system to produce these drooling idiot moronials that we see now. And look, there are some younger people listening right now who are wonderful people. And you people especially know exactly what Lindsay and I are talking about. Your peers, you know what they are in many cases. They're useless. And there are two full generations now. When I saw that MTV had hired the former news director at CNN to come into... I got it backwards. CNN hired the MTV director of operations to come into CNN and make it more pop and hip-hop-ish in a loose sense. That was the giveaway. There was a big trend. This happened like 20 years ago, and I knew it was over then. That was the keeper.
Yes, I think you're right. We're now talking about two generations, so I suppose it's no surprise then that the degeneration is sort of exponentially speeding up, and we're saying how astonished we are how quickly it's happening. But then when you consider what you just said, that this has been going on for two generations, and it has been devastatingly effective, the dumbing down in particular. And the problem with the good millennials, is that they're, even though they do realize what's going on, they're too scared to say so because it's uncool. It's uncool to take ideas seriously. It's uncool to talk in complete sentences, paragraphs. It's uncool to formulate arguments. And it's most certainly uncool to identify America's founding principles and whether or not America is still abiding by those. All of that, you see, is impossible now. Moronials could not have the kind of conversation you and I are having at this moment. The moronials who attempted to have this conversation would be dismissed as uncool. and they'd
be banished, yeah, and they would have to text. In fact, when you mention conversation, they don't talk much anymore. They do text. That's the primary means, I think, of so-called communication. Truncated sentences with automatic spell check and syntax correction. They don't need to know how to use the language. They don't need to know how to develop a vocabulary. It's really amazing.
And the single most, the single greatest manifestation of the dumbing down is what happens when they do actually, I put this in inverted commas, speak. You get, instead of speech, well-modulated speech with nice harmonics and clear articulation. Instead of that, you get a quacking sound of the kind that a duck makes with an unending series of upward inflections. Now, if you think I'm exaggerating, just watch Fox. Turn on Fox News right now, or CNN, or any of your major networks. There's no speech. It's quacking. And then when they do finally come down onto a lower inflection, they go back into what's called vocal fry. Vocal fry. Like Satchmo, you know.
You got it. You got it. You know, the ending of a sentence or a paragraph or an epithetical comment on the uptake is weird. Sentences are supposed to meander around, take a little journey, and then end on at least a medium-pitched note, not this up-pitched tempo at the end. It's a strange thing. And you're right. You're totally right.
Well, you see, and that is a very obvious manifestation of the dumbing down that has gone on, and it's the most frequently on display because it's unavoidable. You just turn on television, and there it is, all the time, doesn't stop. And then
so
when I
right.
point it out to people, they initially react by laughing, as you just did. And then they go away, and I come back and say, you know, you're right.
You're absolutely correct.
And America in which everybody speaks that way, and certainly all the women do, that is an America without a future. There it is right there. We don't have to discuss all these other things. Just listen to the way they speak. You know, they're done for.
Right. And when I used to count when someone was iterating or trying to something, how many times the word like would appear, even in a single sentence. And it was multiple times. Where is the intellect? Where is the vocabulary? Where is the semantic talent that we used to have as a people? It's gone. It's gone.
Yes.
Wow.
And
all
I
right.
say that's just one very strong sign among many.
Among many. Lindsay, we'll be right back. Just a couple minutes. Hang on. Lindsay and I will continue as we talk about opportunity. In New Zealand is a marvelous concept. Lindsay is the narrator. It's going on tour in New Zealand quite soon. We'll talk about that and play some music. Time out for music as we continue. Okay, let's get back to Lindsay in New Zealand. All right, Lindsay, what's this opportunity all about? Your idea or someone else's? They were smart to get you involved in any case. What's it going to do?
It was their idea, excuse me. Opportunities existed since about 2002, and what it is, a group of singing enthusiasts, singers, musicians, who go around the country with, and each show that they take around the country has a different theme. Just a couple of months back, for example, they did the Brat Pack about Sammy Davis, Dean Martin, and
Sinatra.
Who's the other one? Sinatra, yeah. And then they hit upon the idea of a Mario Lanza-themed program, and in this country, if you say Mario Lanza to someone who recognizes the name, the next name that person will think of is mine.
Well, as it should be.
Number one advocate in New Zealand, and now with the book worldwide. And so they came to me and said, would I be prepared to join them on one of their tours? And I said, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. What a ridiculous idea. And so it has come to pass, and in about 2 weeks we'll begin rehearsals. We just have 4 days for rehearsal. There are three singers, one of whom is my nephew, and he ended up being the tenor in the family, much to my annoyance, because I'm a sort of gurgling bass baritone wannabe, or wannabe tenor who's a gurgling bass baritone.
Well, that's really something. He must really be a singer. This is not a fluke. These are good people.
He's really good, and he'll be doing most of the lighter part of the repertoire that we'll be honoring Mario with, and that we have another operatic tenor in the team, and a soprano who will stand in for Catherine Grayson, and a wonderful pianist by the name of Penny Dobbs, and the four of us will be on the road for 6-7 weeks, I think, from one end of the country literally to the other.
Very nice. Well, that's fun. That'll be a fun thing to do. You're going to sit there, I guess, and just narrate it, and they'll do the singing with piano.
I'll narrate it and interact. I'll actually sing Golden Days with my nephew. And knowing Mario as we do, we can expect him to drop by for parts of the show as well.
I would hope so. That's very nice. You know, I had this thought many years ago, as you did probably long before I, that they really should put together some of his greatest video performances from the movies and actually put on a concert with full sound, surround sound, whatever, and take it on the road in movie theaters. It should be available. This is found money for Sony. It's just sitting there. Turner Classics. I mean, these films are, he had, you know, in addition to the most staggering voice ever, the voice really by which all others are compared, even though he did not make a career in the opera house. That's the ultimate tribute. But on screen, he had something that you just don't find. Maybe they go back to Clara Bow. She had it. She had it. When she was on screen, she had it. Well, Lanza had it in spades. His charisma on the big screen, and I remember seeing The Great Caruso on a big screen in a revival theater, and it was packed. It was sold out. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Every time he would sing, the audience would stand and applaud. Standing ovation in the movie. Well, you know the story. You've seen it, I'm sure, and it's just it'll never be duplicated. It's a one-time deal.
And that thing that you talk about, the indefinable something, it's apparent even when you turn the sound off and just watch them. There's something that makes you want to continue watching him. You daren't take your eyes off him. What's going to happen? And I suppose it's what we call charisma, but that doesn't quite capture it.
Agreed.
In his case, it was so pronounced. Charisma, X factor, whatever it is, it's a gift from the gods, and he had it in abundance.
It was quite literally overwhelming when you watch it. You can't, you just said it. You can't take your eyes off the face. The face is like liquid in motion. The emotions are just flowing. I never saw a face more expressive on the big screen in my life.
One of the lines I'll be quoting on the tour is Mr. Mayer, Louis B. Mayer, who put him into the movies, and the story that Louis B. Mayer heard him before he saw him. He saw, he heard a recording and then was shown a photograph, and he said, good God, you mean that voice comes out of that face? And I think that sort of echoes what we've just been discussing, that it was the most extraordinary combination of characteristics that made him, well, it made him the one tenor.
When you watch, those of you who have seen it, the film The Great Caruso, and you watch the Celeste Aida, and watch the face, it's just, words just fail to do it. You have to see it to believe it. That's all I can say. All right. Now, did I understand you that during this opportunity tour that you're going to be making in New Zealand, that perhaps there will be some audio and video appearances?
I don't want to give too much away, Jeff, but
I'll leave it at that. All things are on the table.
Knowing Mario as we do, it surely is inevitable that he'll put in an appearance.
Well, it sounds like a real surprise evening for everyone who gets to go. How many cities in New Zealand are worth making a stop in? I don't know much about the country, to tell you the truth.
We're going to 24, so as to whether they were worth making a stop, and I guess we'll find that out during the tour. But these are the 24 tried and true cities that Opportunity have been going to for years and always turned out a good audience. And I often go to the one closest to me, and that's a packed house always. So I'm confident that we're going to do really well. I should mention, too, that I'll be hawking my book during the tour and signing copies. And this actually, for the people who could make it to the concert, is their cheapest option. They can buy my book from Amazon, but they made me charge so much for it because of the color photographs, which you've seen and enjoyed so much.
Oh, yeah.
They can buy it from my website, lindsayperigo.com, and then they can buy it in New Zealand currency, which makes it a bit cheaper. But the cheapest option of all will be to come to the concert and buy a copy.
Well, I get to meet you and get an autographed copy. Yeah. How nice. Go ahead.
I've just realized that the very last words in the book, apart from the appendices, were said on your program. And those words are, "My God, could that man sing?"
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember who said that?
Of course, Noel Till.
He did. And it's with that quote from him that I end the book.
So that was that stunned me when he said that. Noel Till was a 6 foot 10 inch, or thereabout, a bass baritone, Wagnerian singer,
yes,
and also an astrologer, a brilliant astrologer, and I had him on the program to talk about that. We talked a little bit about singing because his career was singing, and then he became a manager in the business. And I mentioned to him before he was on the program that I might play some Lanza, and when he heard him, that's exactly what he said. Oh, my God, could that man sing? And he was no artifice there. Truth is truth.
Yes, well, I think you put that up on YouTube because I've certainly heard it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got in touch with him afterwards as well just to see if I could get him to elaborate on a couple of the things that he'd said to you. And what a beautiful spoken voice he had.
Oh, absolutely.
Mellifluous is the term. Yes, yeah. Yes. No surprise that he was a great singer as well. But those words of his said to you are the words that end my book. So you made a contribution not just with a chapter, which I was delighted to accept, but with those words as well.
Well, how nice. That's very nice. The book is called The One Tenor, and you can click on it right below Lindsay's name and get yourself a copy. I know you'll enjoy it. It's just a fun read, and it is unique. It's a different kind of a book. It's very special, as was The Man It Was Written For.
Yes, I think possibly it's a good idea to make clear it's not a biography. There have been enough of those.
No,
it's
different.
It's not just a life story. It's a musical portrait, and of course there are biographical elements. But even the discussion about whether he had bipolar disorder, which Roland Bessett first posited in his biography, but he never explicated upon it. And so it was good to get the opportunity to go back and forth with him about it. And I'm pretty skeptical about the theory, having spoken to him, but I put the whole interview there, and then I've added my own theory as to the reason that Mario's career was so erratic and ultimately so tragic.
I think it's simpler than bipolar. I think the man was just an incredibly gifted, sensitive human being to begin with, and blessed with this ungodly talent. And how do you reconcile sensitivity and kindness with that much power? Because it really is a power to be that kind of a singer. It's overwhelming. And it is said that he drank and to perhaps soothe his nerves, and he would sit in a room and listen to his records, and sometimes he would weep. It was that big of a gift for him to be the custodian of. I just think it's almost an impossible thing to reconcile the two without some extremes, and that's what we had.
Well, we see what happens to comets, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
They blaze brightly and brilliantly, and then they burn out. And in his case, having those attributes in a world which was already starting to dissemble towards the picture that we were painting at the beginning of the program, there was a lot of envy. There was a lot of professional jealousy on the part of people who, yes, they might have been on the opera stage, but they weren't half as famous as he was. The remarkable thing, you know, last year, Sir Antonio Pappano, who's the musical director of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden, so you can't get more toffee right. and yeah. status than that. He said Mario Lanza was the most famous tenor ever, bar none. But these are his exact words. And then he went on to say, and together with Enrico Caruso, the most influential. Now, to get those words coming out of the musical, yeah. the mouth of the musical director of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, that would have been unimaginable, say, 30 or 40 years ago, when it was still the done thing to disdain Mario, to say, well, he wasn't quite up to the standard necessary for opera, right. and he went sharp and sang too loudly at times. Well, you remember the things that used to get to be said about him.
Oh, yeah.
But now we have people like Pappano, and then our own diva, Kiri Takano, she said flatly, and this is on BBC Radio, no one has ever been able to replace him, ever in a million years. So, and she included him among her top 20 favorites. She was doing a series for the BBC on her 20 favorite singers. Well, he was one of them. No one has ever been able to replace him, ever, in a million years. So now he's sort of got respectability.
Well, better late than never, I guess. But I do remember he was on, as Lindsay well knows, and I have an original of it. Mario Lanza was on the cover of Time magazine in 1951. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
He wasn't even singing in the opera houses. You have to remember this. He was a motion picture star. And after two movies, he was on the cover of Time magazine. That's how big he was. And naturally, the jealousy of the professionals who could never attain that kind of recognition spawned an endless round of backstabbing and cheap shots and constant. But the gift of the voice, you couldn't take it away from him, no matter how much they put. It's like putting Trump down constantly with lies. They would often just do that almost as if they had nothing else to do. Well, let's go take some shots at Lanza. He's too heavy. He's too this. He's too that. Anyway. It's quite a story, and the one tenor gives you an entirely different feel of the man and his legend. It's very well inspired, sir.
And it was nice for the update that I did when I prepared it for hard copy, because it's been out in Kindle for two or three years, but I updated it in readiness for the hard copy, to get a new foreword from Joseph Kalea, who himself is one of the tenor stars of our time, doing very well in Europe and the United States. And he wrote a new foreword for the book. It doesn't replace the previous ones. They are still there. They're by Simon O'Neill, who's one of our star tenors, Wagnerian mainly, and Anthony Kearns, who's one of the Irish tenors. So their contributions are there too, and a new introduction or preface written by my colleague, Dr. Derek McGovern, who's also well known in the Lanza community.
Indeed. Well, it is, as I said, it's a completely unique book. It's not a biography. There are many biographies out on Mario, some extremely well-researched, but this is a different way to do it. And I've never seen a book like it about somebody that is not a biography. So again, the inspiration there is you. It's unique, and we're all the better for it. We have about five minutes left till the break, so I'm not going to play anything until after the break. We're just going to continue to fill here and roll over at the top of the hour. What would you like to play tonight? We can start with some of the 1945, 46. I think, in my opinion, All Alone, What'll I Do? All Alone by the Telephone was the song, to me, in which he served notice, not intentionally, but you could hear something extraordinary in the way he pronounced the words, his singing, the emotion in the words. And what was he, 24? Something like that?
He was 24 at that time, standing in for Jan Pierce in the Celanese Radio Hour, I think it was called. So he was standing in for a pretty big name in singing.
Yeah.
So he could not have afforded for that to go wrong. But yes, I imagine you're looking at one of your CDs.
Yeah.
That begins with A Pretty Girl Is Like a Melody.
Yeah.
As you say, this is Serving Notice, All Alone, and that early golden days with Robert Weedy. There's some brilliant stuff there, absolutely. I seem to recall, actually, that you had sent these CDs to Noel Teal,
yeah,
and he'd listened to them, and that's what he reported back to you. My God, could that man sing.
Yes, quite.
And he made some comment, too, about the sexiness in the voice. That quality was quite unique. I remember what he said.
I do, too.
To as much as my libido could stand.
That was truly a classic line. That's exactly what he said. And it's true.
Mm.
Lanza had not only the biggest, most beautiful voice, but the interpretive emotional aspect of it has never been touched. But it was in a manly way, the sexiest tenor voice, the richness of it, the texture of it,
yes,
the coloration of it was overwhelming. And I've had people tell me, in fact, I dug up, let me think, which song was it I found in the vault and got it out. Just a second, I'll find it. I can't remember. Thine Alone. Thine Alone had not been heard basically since it was sung in the Coca-Cola radio program in 1951-52. I don't think it had been released. But I got that after many, many years and put that in the CD. Now, there was another song that, hold on, it was made famous. Who was the tenor that was contemporary to Mario, that he was compared to sometimes? Gigli.
Gigli was a little bit before him, and in fact was one of Mario's idols.
That's right.
But it was a generation before. Gigli died in 1957, two years before Mario.
Yeah,
but he was a lot older than Mario.
There was a song I found and pulled it out, and the heck was it? Anyway, I'll find it during the break. These people heard it, and it had literally, this one had not been released at all. I think Thine Alone might have been on one of the LPs. But this one, and it was sung in Italian, and I'll tell you what it is after the break. They were only able to listen to the first half of the song, and they had to turn it off. They were Gigli fans. And they couldn't believe what they were hearing.
In a good way or bad way?
Good. All good. They were absolutely knocked over.
Right.
So. And then I found Make Believe. That I don't think was around for a long time. I got that out of the vault, too.
Yeah, Make Believe was, I think that was on the original A Kiss and Other Love Songs.
Yeah.
Or no, the Magic Mario LP, but that came out donkeys years ago, and make believe it sort of disappeared without trace. It was one of the Coke Show performances. And of course they had to rely on those Coke Show numbers for there to be any Mario for those silent years when he was having all the troubles with
the studio, right.
And he wasn't allowed to work, so he couldn't make new recordings. So they put out the Coke Show songs and pretended that he was making new records.
Musica Proibita.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes, got you.
That was Gili.
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it formally? Gili?
Gili.
Yeah. All right. Gili was very fond of that song, Musica Proibita.
Yep.
And this couple were big Gili fans. And when they heard Lanza's version, they actually had to turn it off. They were just knocked over. They could not believe what they were hearing. And he recorded this for radio. That's the amazing part. He got up.
That's right. That
for
was
radio.
Another Coke one. Yeah.
Yeah. Coke, when he says,
as far as he knew, this was never going to be heard again.
Heard again.
So,
yeah.
You know, he could have afforded to slacken his standards. To coast, but he still gave every word the attention that he always did. Every word as though it were my last on earth, as he said himself. And with that one, ogni sera di sotto il mio balcone, he starts that so softly and beautifully. I can understand why the Gili people would have been blown away.
Yeah, well, they were. Maybe we'll play that after the top of the hour break. We can play A Pretty Girl is Like a Melody. We'll certainly play All Alone if you'd like. And we'll have some fun. There's some amazing things. All right, be right back with Linz in just a few minutes. Hold on. As we continue on this Friday night